Radio Verte presents Ahuga by Corey Zimmerman.
Bread in the Bone, Act 2.
Last night I closed my door, same as the night before. I heard a noise and said, "Who is it?" The melody paid me a visit. I said, "Now don't get gay. What will the neighbors say?" I tried my best to act real haughty. See, but that melody was naughty.
Joyful Monday, the Holy Ghost and the Souls in Purgatory. Papa and Arturo put on Norfolk jackets over threadbare overalls cuffed at the heels, and grabbed two newsboy caps off their nails and their pails, two yellowed tobacco boxes. Josefina holds out a dinner thermos of coffee, nudging Arturo. With a pleasant nod, he opens the screen door, as Papa, with a gentle grasp, rubs his callous thumb on Josefina's chin, saying silently, yet somewhere about the heart, what's bred in the bone will come out in the flesh. And with another slap at the door, Josefina watches from the window as they position their caps on their heads, two peas in a pod, as they stroll off for the train yard but a few yards away. With the same step, same stride, and same blood running through their veins, the two disappear into a dense fog settled so low that it sits right on the tracks. About the lingering mist, over 2,000 men and boys have lined up, most of the town's male population, in fact, smoking and gibbering on about this and that, sipping their thermoses before the factory gates on East Elm. A mural on a brick wall reads in large white letters, P and O, and below in yellow, the largest and oldest permanently established plow factory on Earth. The sun rises on the eastern front when the factory whistle, known as Big Toot, blows, a crying shrill skipping across the peaks of rooftops at 8 o'clock sharp. As the guard rolls open the gate, Papa and Arturo step forward amongst the laborers filing in, toe to heel, dressed head to toe in denim, for a 12-hour work shift of blacksmithing for Mr. Orndorff, who had arrived in his own private entrance in a fancy car. Meanwhile, a scruffy pockmarked man gives Papa a good shove from behind, steps on his heels, saying, "Move your ass," calling Arturo a whipback when he scowls back over his shoulder.
"Cabron,"
mutters Arturo, and the man lashes out. "I'll cut your goddamn tongue out and feed it to the strays," and so on, as Arturo turns to face him squarely head-on. The pockmarked man, towering over Arturo, furrowed in the brow, lip quivering above hide-bound teeth, wants to pounce, chomping at the bit, veins popped, just starving for an excuse.
"Arturo," says Papa, giving him that look that Arturo knows all too well,
saying silently, "Count your blessings with the slightest fluctuation of the eye." 8:18 a.m. Hammers in hand, a handful of boys and men ride a large freight elevator to the upper floor with their materials while most others take the stairs. With a creak and a pop, they jerk to a stop and exit, as a man with broad shoulders and a black suit and bowler hat overlooks the foundry floor, a sprawling monochromatic room of Dantean darkness, where dangling bare bulbs burn sharp silhouettes of countless curved-spined men, given hell to iron, deeply into the retina. The 45-foot walls are covered in an endless array of spare parts and tools, with coats and hats strewn about. Another looming supervisor strolls down a row of downward-tilted heads that swivel upon their swollen shoulders, every man to his trade, cranking, scraping, chiseling, filing, hammering, clank, clank, bang, bang, clank, clank, bang, bang, reverberating the bones, liquefying the marrow, jarring the jaw, shattering the teeth, the hammering, a rhythmical and deafening, boxing the brain. With ears in a constant ring, Arturo joins the other boys, sweeping and scurrying after hollered errands, running about like headless chickens, amongst heap of scrap iron and char, shoring up endless tasks of an infinite kind, from sunup until sundown.
Meanwhile, Papa and the pockmarked man from the street work on the far end of the floor where a bubbling furnace, molten iron at its volcanic center, blinds the eye as mighty as God. Only a thin layer of rawhide shielding mortal flesh from the blistering heat of hell. 9:16 a.m. Josephina divides her long dark hair into three equal sections at the nape of her neck and secures the braid with a length of green ribbon, leaving a tail at each end to form a bow, all the while making a low, continuous hum like that of a bee. She keeps her eyes downward within the melody of thoughtful absorption, mind as tight as the straps on her huaraches, until she stands to grab her new basket, weaved with willow, and throws on an ocean blue rebozo, the long wool garment to block the sun from her shoulders, though it fails to comfort her the way her mother's always has. 9:21 a.m. It's laundry day at the Olsen home, and my mother has just finished wringing gathered socks of suds. Before moving on to the linens, she brings me breakfast in bed, where I lay bedridden, rather, where she has ridden me to be. And if it were not for the iron hammering in my brain, I would not complain. OJ, I say, now you know it's not the season. They must have really threw you for a loop. Drink your milk now, mister. It'll make your bones strong. And she squeezes my bicep. I pull my arm away, feeling precisely foolish. I am anything but strong, hence the bandage on my head. I poke my rubbery eggs, set the plate aside, and peel a Chiquita banana. Bananas are always in season. Do we have any oatmeal? I shout from my confines. 9:27 a.m. Josephina hurries out the door, and with a slap, Our Lady of Guadalupe is left crooked on her nail. The Virgin. She has delicate features and straight, unbraided hair, simple hair parted right down the middle, framing her face. She stands in contemplative prayer with her hands joined, a little finger separated from the rest. Her head, slightly inclined, gazes with heavy-lidded eyes at where the door has just slammed shut. Clothed with the sun and moon under her feet, upon her head she wears a crown of 12 stars, mother, father, son, and daughter reflecting off the center of her eye. Josephina struts along the tracks past P&O for the junction, heading west to where the tracks cross Main. Here, she continues on for 2 long miles for the train bridge on the western edge of town. Crossing high over Big Creek, Josephina meditates on the tips of her toes, peering between the sleepers at the brown stream of water below. Back on land, Josephina skips down a steep hillside into a vast prairie, where she's swallowed by towering pony grass, burgundy seed heads swaying in the breeze. Deep in the sea of fauna, her almond skin radiates, as do the yellow hues of her dress, luminous like a rice paper lantern, silken braids bobbing about her ocean blue rebozo, a washed out turquoise in the sun. Josephina begins gathering daisies in her basket, which hangs upon her arm, a loose strand of hair curling about her sharp cheekbone. And with one eyebrow raised, she grins at nothing, slicing through stems with Papa's knife. Delicate petals fall free to the earth, those soft, warm lips singing the sweetest song.
Palomita, vamos a mi tierra, y seremos felices los dos. Palomita, vamos a mi tierra, y seremos felices los dos.
Snap! A rustling startles Josephina silent. She turns quickly to look back over her shoulder at the tree line, her brow heavy, slanted deeply inward like a raven's wings, intensifying the severity of her gaze. Doe eyes now piercing, glossy saucers that shimmer and shine, reflecting the darkness of the thicket back at itself. I see you, she hollers, as the red fox darts out of the trees, disappearing into the pony grass. Josephina smiles, remembering my long, skinny legs, but quickly frowns, remembering walking those skinny legs trembling through the high part of town. 9:28 a.m. to climb the hillside to the tracks above, sulking rather than skipping back across the bridge. Losing sight of her good fortune high above in the sky, she suddenly slips on a pebble. She trips dangerously forth, fluttering on the edge like a hapless baby bird about to fall from its nest, flailing her arms in large circles, She does her darndest not to plummet, half her bundle scattering, flowers falling gracefully to the muddy stream below. Slowly, she steadies herself and steps back from the edge. Closing her eyes, she takes a deep breath and remembers her delicate place upon the earth, counting her sacred blessings, just as Papa always reminds her. AM. Cooking up Mama's stew just the way she used to, Josefina is sure to exact its taste. Though Papa would never mention a word, simply licking his plate clean. Josefina drops a neck bone into a terracotta pot and adds a pinch of salt as she tosses her braids out of the steam's way. She removes the stalks from enough dried chilies for a copper-plated belly, slitting them open, scraping out the veins and seeds before tossing them into the burbling broth. Crushing cumin with a slam of her fist to the side of Papa's knife, she drives her frustrations into the tabletop, rattling chipped china and her teeth alike. Next, she chops cloves of garlic and onion, remembering Mama's eyes and how they once sparkled in the steam, her own welling up in the sulfuric fumes. Josefina quarters 8 tomate verde, leaving the husks intact, and relishes the scent, subtle and rare. Mixing the chileo with a wooden spoon, she takes a breath of the steam and pleasurable pain, the meat tender to the bone. Plopping down on Papa's stool with a pair of shears, Josefina begins to trim the tiny leaves from what's left of her bundle of daisies, a soft singing, the tale of a cat, cat in love. And so it goes.
Estaba el señor Don Gato, sentadito en su tejado. Mira, miau, miau, miau. Estaba el señor Don Gato, sentadito en su tejado. Mira, miau, miau, miau.
While the meat cooks, the flat floats to the surface, and Josefina dips the spoon once more to see if it coats, as it had for Mama.
Ah, recibe una carta, que si quiero ser casado. Mira, miau, miau, miau.
Josefina stops to wince. Sometimes it hurts. Sometimes it stings when she sings. She stands from Papa's stool to remove a small pot from a shelf lined with tar cloth. She places it on the end of the table. Stepping up on the crate, she grabs the can of tomato soup. Picking up the knife and clenching it in her fist, the leafless tree sits silently in the breeze. Slowly, Josefina raises the knife high above her head. And with a swift jab, she stabs deadly. The long blade deep into the lid, red sauce oozing.
Con una gatita parada, sobrina de un gato parado. Mira, mau, mau, mau.
Opening the stove, Josefina pokes at the hot ashes and adds a scoop of coal. She dumps the candles into the small pot, which quickly begins to burble about the edges. The yolk pops in the stove, and ay! She shouts, a spark landing on her arm. She kicks the stove, shaking off the pain, singing on in high tune.
Se ha roto siete costillas, el espinazo y el rabo.
Chopping the stems evenly across the bottom of the daisies. Josefina pours water from the pitcher into the empty soup can, slides the stalks in, and places the lovely vase of Bellis perennius, qualified as the common daisy, onto the table. She pours the tomato soup into a wooden bowl, grabs a wooden spoon, and pulls up to the table on Papa's stool. Looking up at the crooked virgin, she shines an ornery grin before throwing her rebozo before her face, and lets out a giggling cry.
Ay caramba, Don Gato!
12 noon. Big Toot cries out in hunger. The workers file out for cold lunches to be eaten alone or in small clusters about the warehouse yard. Squat about hazardous materials and atop heaps of iron and bundles of wire. A few linger back and open their tin pails at their workshop tables with unwashed hands, as doing so would take a third of their lunchtime. Cold lunch is often paired with lukewarm coffee, leftover pie, and day-old bread, preserved meats, a wedge of hard cheese, a hard-boiled egg, and a handful of hard hickory nuts, most munching on leftovers from the night before, potatoes cooked by wives and sweets tucked away, traveling foods, as anything wet and sloppy is more bother than it's worth. The Swedes in the back corner of the yard eat pickled herring from tins in between puffs of hand-rolled stogies. As a few yards off, beside a cistern of crude oil, the Italians chew on hunks of pastrami, cheese, and olives, between drags of hand-rolled durum. A lot of the fellas with shaky hands sneak off to the beer hall for a quick swig and an honest laugh for lunch, while Arturo and Papa lean against the wall out front, eating tortillas with Josefina's bone stew, as the pockmarked man crosses path, kicking over their pail, springing Arturo to his feet. The man grabs him by the collar like a dog on a ham bone. "Go on, Spick, give it a shot." "Tranquilo, tranquilo," says Papa, slowly rising to his feet, with palm extended. "Disculpe, disculpe." "What's that, Spick?" "This here's America. We speak American." "Arturo," says Papa, with his ever silent words. "Arturo." The pockmarked man pants, fist bald, knuckles white as bone, the vein in his forehead pulsating with rage. Switch! A blade appears at Arturo's throat, shimmering in the midday sun. "Split you open like a hog, boy." The man foams with hate. "Arturo, disculpe con este hombre." Calm with his words. "Cuenta tus benedicciones." Arturo, but a boy, swallows like a hardened man. "Pardon me, pardon me." "That's right," spits the man, running the blade across his own neck from ear to ear, as he lets go of Arturo and points the knife toward Papa, and with jaundiced, bloodthirsty eyes, eyelids that twitch, he switches the blade shut and walks on as the chileo seeps back into the earth. Papa hands Arturo a tortilla with a shaking hand, saying, "Sit." And Arturo sits, soul quivering with rage. "Lo que se cría en el hueso, saldrá en la carne." Tracing his finger, forehead to breast, shoulder to shoulder. "What's bred in the bone will come out in the flesh." p.m. With her basket of daisies, Josefina brisks down Cherry, passing houses not unlike her own, humble homes with tar paper roofs and ridges bowing under the weight of the seasons. Paint the color of dirty wash rags, the kind my mother tosses out at the end of the season, paint shredded and peeling to the ground, collecting like dried leaves and dry rot lots. A ride at Maine, she skips across Maple, passing the first two-story homes in sight, as giant oak limbs shade the effervescent lawn from the searing late July sun. The paint, of course, silk white. She crosses Walnut, where on the left sits my school, a four-story Gothic building, where a chorus of learning pours softly out of the many long rows of windows. Josefina crosses Pine and passes Vic's candy cane barber pole, spinning endlessly on. Aruga! Passes Henry Ford's Ford. Colorful signs on each side of the uptown street, one which reads, "Drive slow in C-Town, drive fast in C-Jail." And the most colorful place of all, Gustine's Drugstore. Josefina gazes through the glass at the curios and candies, a fantastic display of wonder. But she ends up peering back at her own face in the glass, removing a bit of tomato soup from her chin as the trolley rolls by, tringling, tringling, in the Bennett Ice Wagon. Josefina takes a right at the First National Bank, crosses the street, and stops to straighten her rebozo before entering the flower shop on the corner of the square. 1:52 p.m. Arturo sweeps debris around heaps of scrap metal that saturate the foundry floor, while Papa mans the furnace. The puckwork man mans the material into a load bucket to be towed overhead to the furnace. There, Papa spills bucket loads of iron into the furnace, where the material melts down into a red-hot lava, to later be formed into plow shields. Dropping his shovel, the pockmarked man takes a quick break to scoop a cup of water from a nearby barrel, and with a quick look over his shoulder, he splashes the remnants of the cup onto his heap of iron scrap. Dipping the tin cup into the barrel again, he wets the metal more, all the while, All the banging and clanking in the world cannot dampen that belittling voice going round and round his head. That tick in his left shoulder. And the hitting, kicking, shoving, biting, pulling, and those whippings in the barn. If he had just milked the cows, if he had just done this, done that, fast enough, well enough, early enough. If his paw hadn't pulled him out of that bunk by his hair before dawn, that tick in his left shoulder. The shaking, the dropping, the striking, the biting, the burning. The cigarette butts that sear flesh. The scent, the pox on his face, not acne scars at all. It hurts when he whips his boy Jimmy the same. Yes, Jimmy, the hog from hell. But hell, it'll make him strong, his father believes, and my paw and Paw's paw. As he grabs a bucket, wrist visibly scarred from rope burn, he ticks and shakes off the feeling with a shake of the hands, hands tied around a pole in the barn. As he bathes the iron scrap with more water, pole to purify his soul with revenge, taking charred at last. With his shovel, he fills the load bucket to the brim with the wetted material and gives Papa the whistle, tossing his arm up, offering Papa a grin. Papa nods and gives the chain a good yank. p.m. My mother enters my room, where I sit bandaged, looking through a stack of baseball cards. She sets a clean, folded cloth beside me on my bed. With her hand, she gives it a soft caress and a warm smile. As she exits, I pick up the lime green Rebozo and bury my face in its fresh scent. 2:06 p.m. Sitting out front of the beer house, the town drunkard cradles his puppy in his arms as a man buys a paper from the newsboy. The drunkard forsakes asking the man for a dime, busy scratching the mutt behind the ears. Meanwhile, the florist, a stern woman with a stern scrowl, and no need for half a bundle of daisies, drops half the number of coins, pity coins, in Josefina's hand. 2:07 p.m. The clattering of iron dissipates into the chaotic orchestra that has become these men's lives. As the load bucket rises above Papa's head, he sends the scrap metal closer to its fate. He pulls on a rope, guiding the material across the melt deck for the furnace before him. 2:08 p.m. Josefina exits the flower shop as the florist places the daisies in a brass urn. 2:09 p.m. Positioning the load bucket, Papa pulls down on another chain, spilling its guts into the molten pool as he has a million times before. 2:09 and 1 second. Josefina hears a loud blast and sees a stray trotting away, looking back over its shoulder, tail and ears tucked away. 2:09 and 3 seconds. A molten metal splash. A violent regurgitation of lava spewing from the furnace with a blinding flash. A tsunami of holy hell. As smoke cakes the windows black, Dante's vision comes to light. Harsh shadows cut deep by raging flames. Survivors clogging the escape. A stampede trampling for its life. Inferno licking bones clean of flesh. Hellhounds howling in the night. Souls of those who will die this day. In death's agony, crying out. Choke screams of last dying breaths. Holy Mary, pray for me. Cleanse my soul with the blood of death. O my God, I offer thee all the holy masses. Ashes to ashes. 2:10 p.m. Josefina's heart begins to race and skips a beat in confusion, spinning round and round as she steps blindly from the curb. Ahuga! Henry's Ford swerves around that unsettled stray as the town's drunkard shouts out, "Miss!" And Josefina swivels to see a chrome grill screeching to a halt with a thump, coins jangling to the street. Newspapers free from the newsboy's hand, caught in a wicked breeze as the startled starlings flee from their perch. I wobble to the window to see a blackening sky as a plume of dark smoke swallows the light of day. The drunkard struggles to his feet as women clop out of Miss Mallory's dress shop in jibber-jabbering fright. My father, Rose, and Henry step out of the bank, and Anderson the grocer down off his ladder as the headlines circle back around in a devilish whirlwind. The sorrowful virgin hangs on her rusty nail. Below, an angel lies crooked in the street. Time of death, 2:11 p.m. The high part of town. Over the sugar maple. Josephina, can you hear me? Josephina, are you there? The low part of town. Behind the leafless tree, the chaleo burbles over. La carne se cae. Del hueso. The meat falls from the bone.
Bye.